What show do you do?
It's called Polycast.
On the internet, is it?
What episode are we on now?
16.
Old enough to drink.
Old enough to drive elsewhere.
Yeah, in the not-so-civilized part of the world.
Welcome to the 16th episode of Polycast, where Wadar thinks is the age where only civilized countries have as drinking age. I am joined by, of course, the aforementioned Wadar. You can all direct hate mail to him. I know I will.
send me hate mail.
Say hi.
Hi.
that's good enough. Maki, Lua.
Hello. Imran's been drinking a little himself, apparently.
Daniel Quick, who is back.
Hello, me. I was away. I was having surgery. You can read about it in the forums at some point when I give a crap. Talk about it. Okay.
There you go.
And our guest co-host, once again, Grandpa Troll.
Hello.
Yay.
And me, Imran Siddiqui, who am also back. I'm sure you're less happy to see me. Hi, me. Hi.
So let me just check my checklist first here. So I've been away. See, did I miss out on the release of Beyond the Sword?
No.
No. Good. Did I stop being personally insulted on a daily basis?
Oh, no.
No.
And let's see, did Mackie finally agree to go out with a fellow co-host but chose Imran?
No.
Has anyone noticed? I think it's updated signature where he said Polycast blows everything out of the water.
All right.
Well, actually, just might have been a couple of those words. But,
oh, okay. Damn.
I knew what he really meant.
Exactly.
Reading between the lines.
Hey, did you trademark it?
Yeah, speaking of trademarking, what do I want my Dan forming back?
No!
In this week's news, we talk about all the stuff that was revealed about Beyond the Sword this week. We talk about corporations, espionage, scenarios, new civs, trade routes, everything you can think of. A lot of stuff. That's just, I guess I can't think of a good closer.
In the modcast, we look at the worst three concepts in the history of gaming, especially vassal states. Although, really, two of the concepts weren't concepts at all. Oh, it was suggested that we should rename the Modcast. It was going to be renamed the MackieCast, but Mackie left Modcast at the altar, so still Modcast.
Yeah. She'll have to claim it. In the Time Machine, we talk about the Rise of Nations, which was released 4 years ago this month.
Woohoo! And we're still waiting for Rise of Nations 2. Come on, Big Huge Games, what's your problem? And in the mailbag, we got a real voicemail from David Holton, who goes by Kylos Landry on the forum. And Night Owl follows up once again with comments from episode 15. One of my favorites, actually, is the AI can win a culture victory. When the hell has a human player ever won a culture victory? That's what I want to know.
Well, maybe you haven't.
There's two of us. I think I got like one victory, and that was a one-on-one against a human player who wasn't there, I think. So, I just enjoy playing the game.
That's a good strategy for you, then.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Shall we talk about Beyond the Sword?
Well, I guess we shouldn't have complained that there wasn't much news about it, because now we're just deluged with it.
Beyond the Sword has a lot of potential breakthroughs for this game, and I'm really excited. It's got some similarities to Call to Power.
I'd like to send out a message to all those gaming sites out there who would like to release Beyond the Sword information in the future. Could you please check the recording schedule of Polycast for publisher previews, because you need to consult with us first.
Dan, why don't
you're disappointed.
Why don't you write them an email, each and every one of them? IGN, GameSpot, Eurogamer, just tell them. I'm sure they'll understand.
I saw one article about the trade routes, Kaltar had a lot of good concepts, and unfortunately the AI wasn't where it should be. I didn't think the tread routes were terrible in there. It's just I didn't like that they could be pirated so easy. But my favorite tread route so far has been Civ 2, where I cut my teeth on Civilization. That was, of course, on PlayStation 2, or PlayStation 1, rather. And that was where you could take a tread route and send it to whatever city you wanted. You could send food, production, or I guess say you could use a trade route to consume, be consumed within a city to help towards production. And I really thought that was a wonderful concept, and I really missed that. I mean, cause that way if you built a city on a mountain that was surrounded by mountain, or hills rather, you could offset the food on it. Anybody have any...
I think Civ 2 trade routes are the worst idea ever.
Wow.
Because they are... a micromanagement hell. And it's horrendous to constantly have you move your caravans all over the map. And you have to move the boats into other continents. My God, that was horrendous. In that sense, I do like the Civ, the call to power trade routes much better. I mean, they were visible, but they were basically a one-click affair. This looks like Beyond the Sword will have something like that as well, and I do think that's a great implementation.
Uder, can I ask you a question, please?
Yeah.
I want to behave myself in responding to your little snip there. But in real life, okay, you don't just take a... And I know we're not... Well, we're trying to make it real life in the game. You don't take a trade route and just say, okay, it's set forever. You can send between cities, and if you see a place that actually needs it worse off, and again, you find it a micromanagement Hades, well, that's understandable. But me, I think it gives you more control, and maybe if there was a kind of a high ground.
There's still a lot of control in Call to Power. I mean, you could cancel trade routes, you could move them.
The thing with Call to Power, and it does the trade route, but the thing where the caravan did in Civ 2 was you could transfer food or help in production. Of course, there's other ways to you can call the power to do that. But
exactly, there are other ways to do that. There's no reason why it would have to be such a management hell.
Right.
There are much easier ways to do it. And after all, this is a game, not reality.
Well,
there's not one aspect about Civ that's truly realistic.
It's real to me. Okay, that's fine. That's one of the...
Well, I think I agree with Luder a little bit here. That does get a little bit tedious just to send out caravans all over the place. I think there may be some sort of middle ground that can be achieved rather than just sending out caravans or whatnot. Maybe you originally have to send out a caravan, and after that, there becomes a trade route that's linked until you change it or something like that. I mean,
yeah, that would be a good idea also.
So, you know, something as a mix of that could definitely work, in my opinion.
All right.
Yeah, but they didn't take out the caravans because they wanted to mess with the way the trade routes were. It was because people would use the caravans and stockpile them up and insta-build wonders.
Oh, yeah.
It was that other feature of the caravan got them removed, not the trade routes. So.
Can somebody answer this question? And I'm just referencing Call to Power since it came up, and I'm wondering about this and if this will be even available. I used to build a lot of cavalry in Call to Power, and what I'd do is I would send them real close to a city that I knew I was going to be rushed by something like a big wonder. And then I'd just throw them into the city and disband them, and then I'd go ahead and have the wonder in no time at all. And, of course, people would say, hey, did you cheat?
Yeah.
I'm like, no, Gramps can't cheat, or could, I guess, if I was told how. But that's the shortcut I was told years ago. But can you not do that in any of the Civ game? I mean, the Civ 4? Could you do that to
in Civ 4, no, but you could still do it in Civ 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be neat to be able to bring back, but of course, some people, it's not really a cheat, it'd be an exploit.
Yeah, it's too easy to exploit because I saw that in the diplomacy games happening and stuff. Because you'd think people wouldn't be able to build something, and all of a sudden, poof. What the?
Nowhere.
Yeah. That's exactly. Whether you do it with caravans or with units, it's the same exploit.
Yes, sir.
And yeah, it's really something you want to avoid.
I've been biting at the bit.
When the physical trade routes was announced, there was a lot of discussion about whether it was good or bad in relation to Call to Power, and we can see that here. You mentioned briefly about the piracy aspect. We don't know if that's going to be in beyond the sword, but what did people think about that aspect in relation to gameplay? Is it the concept we like or don't like, or just the implementation?
Implementation. Concept is probably a good one. We all know that piracy has gone on for a long time, but I don't think the implementation was that great. I mean, you shouldn't be able to take away 100% of a trade route just by parking a unit there or something. It should be a little bit less at some rate. I don't know how you'd make it less, but it's somewhat less.
And that's a good point, because I've gotten into many a debate on Call of the Power about this. They say, well, pirates have been going on for years, and it's still going on today, but you don't just park a ship of a line out there in the middle of the ocean, and here comes a blue trade route, and you say, I got you, you're mine, and kill it off. You know, I mean, you may be able to intercept the ship, but it wouldn't take a seaworthy going vessel too long to realize, wait a minute, we can't go down this route. We need to transfer go another way. If it's a little longer, we still get our goods or, you know, the gold, whatever we're trying to make off of it. A penalty, perhaps, but not the whole trade route.
Yes, I agree with that.
Okay, so you could just have one unit and you just park it there, and then every turn you've successfully pirated it?
Well, every turn there's a trade route going that way.
I absolutely agree with it. It was too powerful in the Call to Power series, and it would be nice to see if Firaxis can come up with some kind of middle way.
Even like some small 10% bonus or something like that, you know, that you'd get. Or something like that, until pirate was dislodged or something like that. And we have the random events, I know, but you know, maybe you could have something where you've destroyed piracy or something, where the level goes down based on as technology advances or something like that. None can
resist. One of the new concepts coming out beyond the sword is I really like. You could take a couple of products and turn them into ethanol. Was it corn and?
Oh, yeah, with the corporation.
Yeah, I mean, that is pretty darn cool. So you don't have to have one source. You could have another source and create that, which is more realistic. Of course, it would have to be further on down the line.
That's with the extrapolation of what corporations are. It seems that one of their main benefits, aside from just gaining more money from franchising it to other civs, is also that you can create things that you might not have had to. You might not have oil, but if you have other things, you can create ethanol, and you could build those units later on. I think it's actually a very brilliant idea.
Amen.
I think some people were clamoring for, well, if you don't have this, then how can you compete in the later game? And this is one way in the later game of getting over some of that, because in our current society, I mean, it's hard to really see an advanced civilization not have access to tanks or something like that. You know?
Right.
Or also aluminum ink, granting access to aluminum if you have a supply of coal. And I also liked, with creative constructions turns obsolete strategic resources like iron, copper, stone, or marble into extra production for your cities. Not that I think any strategic resource should become obsolete, or any resource should become obsolete for that matter, but perhaps that's a different discussion. Just a
barrier. But the one thing that was interesting that was just added based on the post that I did on the GameSpot preview, they said the random events has confirmed that there are positive as well as negative ones, including natural disasters, of course, and diplomatic marriages that may boost relations. So you may get a random event if that's saying that your son married Tokugawa's daughter, and now your relations have gone up by, you know, plus five or something.
I think my reaction would be, I have a daughter. Crap.
Well, if you lived for 4,000 years, Dan, you would hope you'd have one.
Yeah, and another positive resource of a positive event that mentioned is resource discovery.
Oh.
In Save 3, you could lose resources, but now you can apparently gain them. So that sounds interesting as well.
Indeed, indeed.
Although it's time to time in Save 4 already, you could already, for example, if you mined a hill.
Oh, yeah, that's true, yeah.
That's right.
A very, very small chance.
They said there are at least 100 random events in the game, positive and negative.
Yeah.
Wow.
That sounds like
that's a
SimCity.
That sounds very fun, though. I mean, I think I like that aspect of it.
Yeah, definitely could be a game breaker for somebody.
Well, it's an option, so you could turn it off.
Maybe they'll have volcanoes, too, like in Civ 3. Dang.
We were talking about that last week, I think.
Yes, volcanoes. That's had hurricanes and earthquakes.
Oh, no. They put in Hurricane Katrina's event. Why do I have a stinking feeling here?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I'm going to get some hate mail here, but I can think of a negative event. A Bush has been nominated as your president.
Watch your mouth.
Watch your mouth.
Tuna, the sunny half
silly. Yeah, our audience again.
Audience? We have one? The other thing I thought was more and more is being revealed about the espionage thing. I'm not sure how much I'm starting to like it. I don't know, the espionage slider seems kind of weird to me.
Well, I'm usually not a big fan of espionage. I mean, there are plenty of other games that have it, and Civ has had it, of course, as well.
Right.
But I can't say too much, of course, but I have played this game, of course. Been playing it for a while, and I absolutely love this espionage feature. I usually don't like it, but okay. it's really great. It's really easy. Usually, espionage is again, it's a sort of a micromanagement hell. You have to click all these buttons and do all these things. Well, there's still all sorts of things that you can control and can manage. But as it's pointed out in the article, once you gather a certain number of points, a lot of it happens automatically. You automatically get information, you automatically get all sorts of stuff, and I'm really starting to fall in love with that. I'd never expected it, but it's a really cool little feature.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, because it sounds, I mean, the stuff that they have listed, I mean, you think you can go either way. I'm glad to hear that it's working.
It would be interesting if you can build enough espionage defense. Well, of course, if you want a war, you can say, oh, they stole our we're going to go to war for them because they keep stealing our technology, you know, and then you create a war or a possible situation to go to war over.
I'm pretty sure I've read somewhere that there are defenses against espionage.
Yeah, Security Bureau, right?
Yeah, the building is mentioned, but there are ways to stop espionage and to counter espionage. I read somewhere that some units can also perform counter-espionage. I'm not sure about the details, but...
We don't have to wait for spies to make their appearance for espionage. Oh, no. We now have ninjas.
Ninja. I like that.
Early game spies.
What?
Can we have a ninja versus pirate battle?
Of course, they say they have ninjas these days. I don't know. It's some of this myth, but whether or not there are or not, but...
I'm a ninja.
Who said that? The force is strong.
You know what I think ninjas need? I think they need some good marketing. I think the ninjas need a theme song like, everyone was kung fu.
Oh, well, there.
Oh, Carl Douglas, amen.
I couldn't be there. That should be their sound effect when they execute something. Be like, oh,
I think there ought to be a pretty severe penalty if you get caught spying. I'm not talking you get like a 1 point in poor favor in the other country's eyes, but I'm talking about serious. I think this is called the power. Sometimes you do something and it's not considered an act of war, like slaving. I think stealing your trade route. What the heck? If you're stealing, that's an act of war. It doesn't belong to you. So I'm thinking, you know, if a person could coordinate this, a statue of Zeus and this apostolic palace would probably do a pretty good number on somebody if they were spying during this time. The statue of Zeus doubles war weariness of the civs that are at war with you.
I guess I don't play up on a higher enough difficulty level because I really don't see the benefit to that wonder at all, but that's okay. Although in Call to Power, it was possible that if you pirated someone's trade route, that could prompt to declare war on you. And there is precedent in Civ that there are serious consequences for spies being caught.
And it needs to be.
The other interesting thing that I found about espionage is on the cover of, you know, the game box, Beyond the Sword, they have what looks like a spy holding, it looks like a nuclear suitcase. So it appears that they are actually reintroducing the spy being able to engage in some terrorism.
Well, I wouldn't count your chickens before they're hatched because the box art could just be someone's interpretation.
Well, it's true. But tie it in, if the spy unit can engage in a nuke, I think that should probably be, you know, an automatic act of war right there. I'm discussing about spying having great consequences, if that's an option. I think that, of course, should have the biggest massive penalty no matter how close you are beforehand.
Speaking of nukes, I guess they're going to be tactical nukes that are not as powerful but a lot quicker to make than ICBMs. And paratroopers. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, paratroopers.
I'm I'm not sure how fond I am of the paratroopers or bringing them back in.
They have a cool name,
why?
But...
Did they beat you in a game or something, or what?
There is an interesting post by Monk Spider at Civ War Forums where he details is this betrayal of Sorin's vision, in which I guess his argument was that Sorin wanted a kind of a simpler type of Civ, and in adding all of these units, you're kind of complicating things for the sake of complicating things. I'm not sure whether that's the case with the paratrooper, but that just seems somewhat of a not as useful.
Well,
I think he sort of wanted to get it back down to the basics to make the game fun again, and what they've been doing in the expansion packs is slowly building back up on top of that, but they're not overdoing it, like with what we've discussed on a couple of the mod packs that we've seen that way overdo it. They're just adding a little bit and a little bit at a time.
Yeah, that's true. But the question is, there's a line, I guess.
I think that the paratrooper is a natural progression from going from airlifting to another city. You can take a paratrooper. There's technology in place now to drop armor on a battlefield that you don't have to go to an airfield. So a paratrooper's natural progression, if you get an advanced column that's sliding behind the enemy lines and you want to put a set of a division of paratroopers in, then that is certainly well within military tactics.
I remember in Civ 2 it was a very good tactic to build up a lot of paratroopers. And I hope it's not the case in the Civ 4 where, you know, maybe the paratroopers you build a small amount, but not focus on building paratroopers so you can drop them in.
I think the paratrooper is a nice, very small feature, basically, and it does add a very unique thing to the game. I'm not worried about this going too far in Sorin's vision, but there's a lot of modern units in the game. There's high-powered artillery, there's mobile SAMs, tactical nuke, anti-tank units. You could argue that all those units combined, you get the same problem that you had in Civ 2, that you have so many late-game units. The late game becomes top heavy. You might have a point there, but I think a paratrooper in itself is a very contained, very small little thing. And I do think it's a fun feature and it's a realistic feature, so I think it works great. If it's indeed balanced right.
Somebody had something negative to say about the anti-tank unit. What? There's so many ways to have an anti-tank unit. You could have a worker with I'm sure it's like in Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, you can have someone.
A sock.
A sticky bomb.
A sock. A sticky bomb. I'm serious. No, that's something that they teach you in military. And I'm a military veteran, U.S. Army in the 70s. I'm not sure what a high-powered artillery is. I mean, I'm not sure versus regular artillery. Can you go further with it or what?
Yeah,
or
we
what?
Don't really know. It's also a very lame name, I have to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, anti-tank isn't exactly the greatest name either.
Well, at least it's functional. I mean, high-powered artillery. Anti-tank makes sense to me. I mean, you have anti-tank grenades, anti-tank mines. There are all sorts of ways to counter tanks. So as a name, it sort of makes sense.
That's right.
I mean, high-powered artillery, that's nothing.
Well, just to keep the Civilization classic feel, you could always rename them to Spearmen.
What are you talking about, the anti-tank? Have a Spearmen?
Yeah.
Bring that one back. Can somebody fill me in on, because I came to Civilization only really big time from 3 on, a privateer, was this something to build a pirate coast, or what was the idea behind a privateer?
It wasn't labeled as being from your civilization, so if there was shipping or transports in the water, you could attack them without actually having to go to war. The sub later on took the same place.
What did you get in return? Gold, or are you just doing it to get rid of units?
Just to get rid of units. You wanted to attack their navy and weaken their navy before you were to come in with your own transports or something.
The point is that they couldn't see who you are. You look like a barbarian, and you can attack anyone you want without anyone finding out who you are. That's the whole point of the privateer.
Yeah, for hire pirates.
Okay. So they are bringing that back, then.
It looks like it.
They said it can also attack at peacetime. Well, it wouldn't be peace if you were attacking now, would it?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're enforcing some sanctions. That's what it is.
The new Civs that have been announced. There was the new GameSpot one, just the made official that Byzantium is in the game. They said new civilization includes Native American tribes, as well as Portugal, Babylon, Netherlands, and Byzantium, and the Eurogamer preview had said Gilgamesh and Justinian are leaders in the game.
And Tokugawa.
Oh,
an alternative.
Well, maybe in Europe they don't have Japanese Sis. I don't.
These are no good.
No, we do.
Maybe it's his evil twin or something.
Oh, perhaps so.
Wouter has Wouter, so Tokugawa can have
Tokugawa.
Ra has me.
Yeah.
I'm hoping maybe they got. I'm hoping maybe they got confused and it's actually Nobunaga or someone.
It could be another Japanese leader. That could be. Well, you know, that's the problem with Eurogamer. You know, European to Europeans, all those Japanese look alike.
You might finally get that hate mail you've been wishing for so long, Imran.
I think Justinian and Byzantium go to show that, well, that's a new civ right in there. The Byzantine faction is happy that they have their guys in. Gilgamesh seems to be a, that's on my tongue, Babylonian.
It could be Babylonian, it could be it Sumerian. Could be. In Civ 3, I think it was Sumerian, so it could go either way.
Yeah, Gilgamesh is part mystical too, which is kind of funny.
Well, it was a historic king, but of course he's more famous for the epic that was named after him.
It might be Sumerian.
It could go either way, indeed. It could be Babylonian. If you see Babylonian as sort of representative for the whole region, because there were a couple of other civs from that area.
Yeah, kind of like how they did with Native American.
Oh, no.
Oh, we can't get into the Native American.
Oh, that's so good.
Actually, I was just about to say, Wouter and Imran, do you have some comments?
How long do you want this show to be this week?
The end of Polycast.
Mackie Bruce is going to go away, and we'll come back in about an hour or two.
No, I think Wouter does have a point, though. If you do have Native American tribes, they may have Babylon as kind of an amalgam of Mesopotamian culture, the Sumerians, whatnot.
Akkadians, Assyrians, yeah, there's a lot of sets from that area, and you can't have them all in the game, so it could go either way.
Akkadians, oh, don't even, oh, jeez.
I agree. You just have to pick. It was a Native American tribe, and quite arguing about all the different leaders, because they ain't handle more. They didn't last. Try to get all the Native American tribes, and I guess we can start a scenario.
That's
on that.
A scenario kind
of
thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, ma'am.
With the new ones, it looks like the 6 of the 10 civilizations have been revealed, according to Solver's wonderful, I guess, Beyond the Sword fact sheet.
Right.
We got Babylon, Portugal, Netherlands, Native Americans, the Mayans, and Byzantium.
The Mayans?
The Mayans are also new. We didn't know about that one yet.
I didn't know about that one.
Yeah, yeah. If you look at Solver's fact sheet, you can see that.
Page 1, too. Opening post.
Yes, opening post. That's correct.
It's based on a screenshot from Pakal. I mean, it's very clear, and I think someone confirmed it somewhere on Civ Phonetics, I think Tripp or Alexman, that it was indeed Pakal. So Pakal of the Mayans is also in the game.
Of course, yeah, there was other screenshots released that some people see as perhaps the screenshot is William the Silent or Willem van Orange, who is, you know, if you compare it to pictures of him, seems an absolute match. And the other one, they're speculating maybe Suleiman of Ottoman Empire.
Amen.
Yep. I think Willem van Oranje, William of Orange, I didn't think he looked like the pictures at all. You can see it was based on
him. How did I know he was going to bring this up?
Oh, God.
All right.
Well, think about it. Guys, give him a break. If they Abraham Lincoln or George Washington look wrong, we'd complain, too.
Anybody got an updated photo of either one of those? Do we actually know what they look like, or what?
Well, they're portraits, I guess, and
we do have a time machine, but it's only a segment, so. But wasn't it also revealed that with Beyond the Sword, you can take any leader and have them be the leader of any civ?
Oh, yes, that's right.
Ooh, interesting.
There is that option. Oh, and by the way, Solver has also said that Suleiman was confirmed by IGN as the other leader pick, so I guess they have a second Turkish leader as well.
There's one point about leaders. It's not listed on Apollotome, but on GameSpot there's a screenshot of a Greek leader, and CFC says that this is Pericles, so that's kind of interesting.
Ooh.
A second Greek leader, or actually a first actual Greek leader, as Marcos would say. On IGN there's also a screenshot that reveals a really, really cool elephant unit with some kind of giant crossbow thingy on it. crossbow or ballista, I mean, we don't know exactly what it is. But people in the forums have suggested that that might indicate that that's a unique unit for the Khmer or the Thai. That would be pretty interesting.
I saw that.
That's as if, especially the Khmer, I've been wanting them in the game for years, so that would make me really happy. That's a type of Sith we've not seen before in any of the previous games.
Okay, and if that makes you happy, that benefits us how?
I don't know, it benefits me.
Dan?
Yep.
On your remark you just made, I thought when you have a revolution in your country, is to pick a new trait for your leader. Basically say if you were scientific and economic in the early ages and then you had a revolution within, and instead of it, say, splintering or causing a major derision in your civilization, you could pick two new traits or one new trait, but it had to be a minimum of one, of course, because it's a revolution. I thought it would be pretty cool in the late game when possibly war is prevalent, you could maybe go to an industrialized civilization and get away from science as you were waning in the advancement field. I thought that'd be a pretty good concept.
Well, a couple of points on that. First of all, you're saying that if you have your civilization and there's a revolution within your civ and now
right.
part of your civ is splitting off, are you suggesting that we would then be able to choose the characteristics or the leader of the...
I would hope so. Colonies can split off from their motherlands and thus form a new civilization. The details about this mechanism are currently unavailable.
That sounds more like a scenario thing, in my opinion.
It's not in the scenarios. I mean, it may be. It's just not listed on.
Well, the details are not available. I'm not sure how that would work.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, using an historical example, U.S. Declaration of Independence from Britain, but then from the perspective of Britain, okay, you've got your colonies in North America, they've
right.
split away, so now we're going to choose the characteristics of the new civilization.
Yeah, you can't have George Washington. We're going to give you Tokugawa.
No, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah, I don't know if you can or not, because I don't have any details to that effect. I'm just saying, splitting the colonies, it would be nice if you could to do that, because otherwise, why have a revolution to start with?
Well, I would think if part of your civilization was wanting to break away, they probably wouldn't want to pay attention to you as who they're breaking away from as to what their character's leader traits
should be. I'll have to send some troops over there and encourage them to follow me.
Oh, well, okay, now it's a little more practical, I suppose.
What we have here is a failure to communicate.
We're also suggesting that if, for example, part of your civilization breaks away and forms a new one, that you could then change your own characteristics?
I think it would be nice if you had a major revolution Russia used to go through. Then you go ahead and you pick a new trait to try to appease.
I mean, that's an interesting idea. I wonder if, you know, they could put it in there, into the game, and have it balanced. I mean, I think it may be too complicated. I mean,
yeah, okay, maybe, yes.
That's just begging to be exploited. There's so many ways you can...
That's what I was going to say.
Well, people of all ages are begging to be exploited.
Are we getting back to putting Grandpa in jail again?
Yes, the family.
Oh, I didn't mean that. No, guys, I wasn't talking about that. I was talking about people want leaders.
Yes.
You made the point about changing your characteristics in order to appease your masses. I thought you were suggesting that once there was a revolution and part of your civilization broke away, then you could change your traits.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Oh.
At that point, you could, when you have the revolution, during anarchy, so to speak, you can pick a certain trait. And then when you come out of the revolution, hey, look, I'm a nice guy now, okay? I'm not a jerk like I was before. Hard to believe, but now I'm here for you. I don't know any details. I'm just saying it would be nice if you're going to have this big revolution that's going to cause a split, that it'd be nice if you could pick another trait.
Well, what I was also getting at, I mean, there's a balancing concern there. And I would prefer, if, for example, part of your civilization did break away, I would think that would be more the result of your action or inaction as opposed to your traits specifically. And I would worry that even with balancing, someone would find a way to exploit that. I think some people start with the random leader, random civs. I rarely do that. I like Canada. Surprise. with the Canada mod. I always have to mention that every episode. That's just
the Pierre Elliott Trudeau.
It's a giggle every time.
But I'd be afraid, for example, if someone shows a random civ, and then they're like, oh, and they started getting into the game, for example, and they had Expansionistic, and that, they decided that was good for them early on in the game because, you know, they like having maintenance problems being in the red. later on in the game, they decide, geez, I don't like that so much. I should shift that. I'm going to need a revolution. Maybe I should start treating some of my cities badly and not build any. You know, I just worried about exploitation.
Yeah, it'd be a little too easy.
Break away already, you stupid dimwits. Gosh, that's what it's going to do.
Break away so I can change my traits already.
All right. Heaven is an option.
Modders out there, you've got your work cut out.
There you go.
That's
a modding idea.
If you're a modder and listening to this show, it is your duty to... Yeah, well...
Your duty, if you choose to accept it.
I noticed a post in Civ Fanatics briefly, a third, and we talk about part of your civilization initiating an independence movement, but he would like the opportunity to grant a region's independence to actually say, okay, I'm going to now split my empire into more than one. With, quote, the opportunity for the player to gain good relations with the new civ instead of being forced into a war with them, and possibly put both civs in a defensive pact for a certain number of turns. And I read that, and I thought, when would you want to do this? I suppose if you were really burdened by maintenance, but seemed an odd...
Well, if you had conquered another civ off on another continent, and the maintenance and trying to support all that was killing you, that might be, yeah, you guys just have your own thing. But then you have a neighbor, a friendly neighbor, over whether he used to be an enemy.
Exactly. I suppose, really, if you wanted to grant a region independence, you just neglect them, and they'll take care of it for you.
There is one final point that I enjoyed about Call of Power that no other Civ game has given you. I loved it how you could take and play strictly Renaissance era. You can play strictly modern era. I noticed that you can start later eras in this, but you can do that already with Warlords. And I was wondering, are you going to be able to do a game, like just say strictly modern, where you can't get to modern armor, but you could have where, the say, Germany was an elite power with the Panzer Division? Anybody have any comment on the scenarios where you can change, I guess the scenarios where you can change the ages?
I'm not sure if that's part of scenarios, and maybe you mean advanced start option.
Maybe that's what it was. Okay.
I think right now you can only do that in multiplayer, but there's a whole mechanism for it where you can place units and you can buy stuff, and I haven't really looked into that because it's not something that I see myself doing very often.
Right.
For some people it's probably a neat little feature, but I'm not sure if you can restrict the end age with that. I think it's you set the start age, and you start with maybe 6 or 7 cities instead of one.
Right.
But from then on, it's just a regular game. It goes on until the space race or the end of the tech tree or whatever.
Amen. I mean, I don't really enjoy space race. I don't really enjoy it. Never enjoyed the Call of Power. A lot of the other games, I've tried them. I'm just not into it. But do you enjoy playing Civilization from day one with a warrior? Or a scout, all the way into the space race, or would you rather keep it on terra firma, on Earth?
Oh, I definitely want to start from a single warrior. This whole advanced star thing is not really something I would enjoy.
Right. And how about the end?
The end? I think right now it's okay. I mean, the way Call to Power went into the future, it's a little bit hokey.
Right.
It's okay, but it's not awfully impressive, and I don't think Civ needs to go there.
Amen. That is something I also agree with.
Yeah, wasn't it discussed in a previous episode about once you got into orbit with Call to Power, you could do some obliterations pretty easily?
Oh, yes. You sure can. Space Marines, or actually Marines and space planes, the game's could be about over at that point. Terrible.
I, too, prefer to start right from the beginning in 4000. BC or BCE, whatever we want to call it, not to even open up that debate, although I like controversy, you know that, with a single warrior, and I too think that the end game is all right. There's always room for improvement. As long as we learn the lessons from Call to Power, I think there are some good ideas out there, but it's just the implementation that needs to be considered, but At the same time, I wouldn't want to see the end game get too top-heavy.
Right.
I think, really, if you want to be looking at explorations in space and civs in space, I mentioned before anyway, Galactic Civilizations, people should check that series out. We just don't want to dilute it too much because the game is already pretty grand, and if we try to be everything to everybody, we will please nobody.
Well, I do like how they're extending the end part of the space race now, where it's more back to the way it was in Civ 1, where it wasn't just launching the ship first, it was getting there
yes,
first.
But don't make me capture the capital in order to...
No.
One of the things that we haven't really heard a lot about so far, in comparison to some other things, is the Apostolic Palace. In the Eurogamer write-up, which I guess is a preview-interview combo, the first page is a preview and the other is an interview by the same individual, Tim McCracken from Firaxis is quoted, "One of the things you can trigger is don't go to war with me. So you will literally make sure that they'll take their weapons and put them behind their back all the way until they discover communism." Quote, unquote. Wow.
That's pretty far down the tree.
Yeah, one person's comment was, whoa, that could really curtail some warmongering strategies. And as much of a builder as I am, that sounds pretty powerful. But I guess we'll just have to see. Tim says, one of the things you can trigger is don't go to war with me. And, of course, the question, I think, then becomes, how do you trigger that? How probable is that? Maybe difficulty level related, number of civs related, your cultural influence related, etc. So I guess we'll have to wait and see, but that sounds interesting, and I'd like to learn more.
It'd be great for the people that like to play the builder type of games, too.
Yes.
Now you have something to keep from getting dogpiled on.
Yes, that helps me. Imran and I were the builders.
Imran, do you agree?
Well, I am Imran. Remember, we sound alike, so.
Oh, that's right.
He's
your alter ego.
Yeah.
Does it say when you can build this?
Not yet.
How far into the game?
But I know some of the other discussion about it was, for example, whether or not to initiate holy wars through this.
It does say 1871. It said residence of the Pope in Apostolic Palace, residence of the Pope in the Vatican City since 1871.
That's
the one
current
we assume,
building. There have been a couple of apostolic palaces.
Oh, I got you.
And it's clearly meant to be an early game feature. I don't see when it's made available, but I think you should think in the terms of around the same time that you could do map trading, something in that area. There's one thing we haven't really discussed yet, and that's the new scenarios. We found out about a Charlemagne scenario.
Amen.
Ooh.
That sounds pretty interesting. And that will have supply trains. I mean, if you fight outside your own border, your units won't heal unless there's a supply train nearby. So kind of a Rise of Nations type feature. That sounds really cool.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Rise of Nations.
Yeah. And one other scenario that we sort of mentioned it, but it's the Final Frontier, a space scenario.
Yeah.
And sort of like Galsif. And I have to say, those graphics look pretty, pretty sweet. Some really awesome screenshots.
No, I saw that and I was like, ooh, finally, I get to play in the solar system.
Yep.
I know, I'm odd. I've been wanting to do that since the original Civ. Like, okay, while I'm waiting to get to Alpha Centauri, can I play around in the solar system?
Yeah, exactly. And that looks pretty nice as well. There will be 12 scenarios in this game. I think we know about 5 or 6 of them. Let me see, a Renaissance scenario, World War II, Afterworld, some kind of fantasy scenario, Charlemagne, and Final Frontier space scenario. So that's 6. There's 6 more, and we'll see what it's about.
I got one good thing to say from what I've read about this Final Frontier scenario. This was right from the latest first look from IGN, or perhaps we should just rename IGN Unofficial BTS Info Central. I don't know. There's tons of IGN articles, for goodness sakes. Their quote, "There's a story for this scenario where you'll play the part of a colony that has lost contact with Earth, and you'll have to figure out what happened to the fabled foam world," unquote. Sounds like some people are Battlestar Galactica fans.
Yeah.
Yeah,
this is good.
In the graphics, some of the ships look suspiciously like colonial ships from Battlestar Galactica. Clearly recognize the colonial one.
That's right.
And some of those Vipers also look an awful lot like Vipers from PSG. So yeah, there's a lot of inspiration there.
So now all we need are the old-style Cylons in the game.
The what?
Toasters!
Fire command.
got news, email news@apolton.net or send a private message to Dan Q, Locutus, Illuminatus, Snoopy369, or Grand Patrol via Apolton's forums at apolton.net/forums.
The Modcast time?
Yep.
Yay! Woo!
In the Modcast, we talk about hot issues that have happened in the forums.
There was a post, the worst three concepts. Now, I don't play massive multiplayer online role-playing games. And the reason I'm asking you, because the opening post by, forgive me, sir or ma'am, whoever you are, Craig Kick Ramsey, opened up the post, ganking, grinding, and I mean, vassal states. I understand about vassal states, but what does ganking and grinding have to do with, and then I read on further, they mean player killing unsuspecting players in unjust situations. That's called war, okay? You're being attacked. And ganking and grinding, that terrible of concepts in a game, or?
Grinding is, it's just, it's a time sink. Because for an online game, they can only put out so much content, so often a time, so they use grinding as a time sink. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's a goal to get new weapons or faction to get your status up to access more of the content. It's a way for them to delay you from getting through all the content in the game and then sitting there with nothing to do while they come up with new content.
Huh.
Although ganking and grinding, there really aren't gameplay concepts there. More player exploits.
Right, because it says concepts when they're not concepts.
The moans about vassal states and about how, oh, working more in favor of the AI, and so that was, yeah, that Kekermezi, and then JB concurs saying that,
right.
Oh, I like to leave an enemy with a few cities, make peace, but then find out they become a vassal of a powerful neighbor and they're a friend, and the only way to finish the job involves complication galore. Well, I guess I'm going to have to be as blunt as the initial criticism. Stop your bitching and adapt. Vassal states are a good concept. I don't like how it's been implemented entirely, but I love ICS, Infinite City Sprawl, and Civ 3 and before, but it was an obstacle and it was addressed tactfully. So, geez, you might have to change your strategy. Isn't that a shame?
Lord Avalon has had a post right below one of mine on, and it was, surely camping is worse than vassal states. But I don't think camping is a bad thing. To me, it's staking claim to a potential territory or finding out who's going to have access to a resource.
Yeah, but exactly. You see a resource of a bronze or iron out there in the early game, and you park a warrior out there just as he's going to get it. That's sort of camping.
Right.
I suppose telling these people now that Beyond the Sword will introduce the option of corpse thrusting, a la first-person shooters, would be a bad idea?
They call it something else in shooter games. I was like, golly.
Yeah, I know that term too.
Are you going to the time machine?
Yes.
Ooh.
Time machine.
In the time machine, we look back at key moments in Civ history.
Rise of Nations released 4 years ago. Wow.
To me, it was really a fun game. It was fairly easy to mod. I don't know how many folks here had played it. It was a click fest, I will say that. And that gets a little old sometimes. But to me, it was a lot of enjoyable. It'll take some time to replay this and start some more posting on it in the section to commemorate its fourth year and also maybe possibly drum up some interest in it and playing it again. And it was a pretty good game. Like I said, I enjoy the modern where you could slow the time down and give yourself a longer game to build up to the war. I didn't like the Armageddon feature where three or four nukes or whatever it was and the game was over. That's really not how it works. I like to completely wipe a civilization out.
Yeah, I played it a lot. I loved it as well. I thought it was nice that it was different for a change. I mean, to me, all the RTS games, they all play the same. Whether you're playing Age of Empires 3 or Command & Conquer 3,
that's right,
or all the way back to June 2000, they all play exactly the same to me.
Click, 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 click.
Yeah. And this was nice. It was really a completely different game. There were borders, you had cities, you had all these unique aspects.
That's right.
That weren't in other games, and I really enjoyed that. This and Dungeon Keeper are the two only RTS games that I can still truly enjoy today.
It was almost Civ as an RTS.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it had formations that actually meant anything. It had supply wagons.
Right.
Governments.
Military leaders.
Most of the features are really unique to Rise of Nations, and indeed are a crossover with Civ, and I really enjoyed that. So I played the game a lot. I modded it a bit as well.
Yeah, governments were introduced with the Thrones of Patriots expansion.
Yeah.
Right, sure. One thing I enjoyed about Ron and TMP was a simple XML editor. You could do modding. That's probably one thing that attracts me to and keeps me with a game is moddability. I love to micromanage. It doesn't bother me. That's something that bothers some people. Me, I'm a manager. I like to really analyze things to see where you can be more efficient.
Yeah, I think when it comes to micromanagement considerations, it's not always, oh, it's a micromanager problem that it needs to be eliminated. We need to get rid of that aspect. It's all in how it's managed, whether it's automated or through some better interface or what have you. And I think Ron really helped us.
Yeah, that's a big part of Ron as well. In the Age of Empires, when your farm obsoletes, you have to completely rebuild it again.
Right.
And Rise of Nations, a lot of that is automated. So the really tedious, boring micromanagement is left out of the game, but you do still have a lot of control. So yeah, it really combines sort of the best of both worlds in that way.
Amen.
Wow.
It's true. Yeah, we got mail.
And it wasn't spam.
That was the other surprise.
Call in today.
In North America, the number is 301-637-659, 301-637-POLLY.
And for Europe, 440-7871-7659, 440-7871-POLLY.
Or you can Skype us at the Polycast.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on the show, including how to write in and how to subscribe to the RSS feed, log on to the official Polycast website at polycast.apolton.net.
Hey, more quietly.
Yeah,
man.
Seriously.
That is mad.
That's what my freaking keyboard makes, damn it.
The people are the heroes now.
We actually got a voicemail that was not a wrong number. I know. I was as surprised as you. I was like, there's another Polycast out there? Really? I thought we were the only one.
What's up, guys? Enjoy the Polycast. This is David from Augusta, Georgia. I just had a quick question / comment. Enjoy the Senate and Modcast. It'd be nice if your segment, you think every once in a while you guys could do a special on just multiplayer strategies or observations, because sometimes I'll be listening to the Polycast and I'll only get to the end of the suggestion or the point you have, and then it's made clear to me that it's actually pretty much only useful against computers or the AI. So I'm just curious if we could get like a focus on a multiplayer on occasion. It'd be nice.
Ganking and grinding.
Taunting? Taunting's good. You suck. How's that? There's my strategy. Oh, I know. Find somebody on dial-up. If you're on high speed, yeah, especially with the timer now.
Try it.
Yeah, okay, I'm done.
I think the general issue here, why we don't address multiplayer, is mostly because, except for Maki, none of us really play multiplayer. So, I mean, I generally agree it's a good idea. Maybe we should give more multiplayer advice, but to be able to do that, we need to have at least two people on board who play any kind of multiplayer.
Right.
Otherwise, you can't have a meaningful discussion. So we can really only do that if we have guest hosts that also are fairly active.
We were all right until you put in that meaningful qualification and discussion. Thanks a lot. Crap. So we'll move on to the next part.
I had a quick question. I don't play that much because I just had my second kid. She's been taking up a lot of my time. I only get to play about once a week or so on Sunday. And I was wondering about the city sizes. I haven't played all that much in the last couple of months, actually. I noticed that it seems like since the last couple of patches, the AI cities are getting larger and larger. My capital is around 20 a lot of times, around, I guess, 1800 AD, 1900 AD. And I'll go fight this AI, and they'll have several 20s, 21, 22, 25, occasional 28, later on in the game around 1950. And my cities aren't growing like that, just my capital. Am I building too many towns, cottages, or do I need to focus on irrigation, just be irrigating, have more farms? Is that basically my only problem? And is the trade-off worth it? Because I just can't keep enough people happy. Will that slow down production, having a city that large and not keeping them all happy, or with the unhealthy faces? what's the trade-off? Is there some kind of bridge where you have so many unhappy over your cap and so many unhealthy where it's just not worth it? Just a question. I don't know if it's specific enough, but I'd like maybe perhaps a general rule of thumb or a principle to go by. I appreciate it. My handle is Kylo Slandry on the Politanet because Zero Cool, my GameSpy name, was already taken. Anyway, any suggestions would be helpful. Appreciate it. Yes, have a good day.
You have to wonder, the AI may have large cities, but it doesn't mean it's necessarily very good at exploiting all that extra population. Unhappiness is a big problem, and unhealthiness. It's better to have a size 15 city that's fully productive than a size 20 city with three or four unhappy people. So, yeah, I mean, you may want to look into that if you can build more farms, more food resources, and build more health buildings like aqueducts and stuff like that. And that allows your cities to grow bigger. But other than that, if your military is keeping up, if your economy is keeping up, things like that, you don't have to really worry about it because the AI is then just not using its full potential of its population.
Agreed.
Yep, and I think also difficulty level, map type,
size,
number of civilizations, that all comes into play.
That's true.
Says he's enjoying the show, and he specifically mentioned he enjoyed the Senate and the Modcast. Well, David, you might not like this episode very much. Uh-oh. We alienated our only listener other than ourselves.
Crap. No. We have two listeners.
Yes.
There's David Guy and Nidal.
I'm listening.
Maybe we'll follow up with David one way or another and maybe find out whether or not he thinks his advice is good enough.
Yeah, we'll hear about it, I hope.
Amen.
Yeah. Night Owl has some comments from episode 15.
I mean, if you have hills, you probably want to use that. But if you don't have hills, you probably want to whip stuff. That was kind of it. Or the alternative that Night Owl proposed was to use water mills and workshops. It's that the best way to get your production. And so now Night Owl is saying that if you have hills, that might not necessarily still not be the best way to get a high production city because you can use the excess food for great engineers. I think he has a point there, but even then I think you might be even better off if you just whip all the production that you need. You do get an awful lot of bonus out of that, and I'm not sure how much you get from an engineer. I guess the main advantage of using specialists is that at least you can change things around. If you suddenly need more culture, you change your engineer into an artist or into a scientist or whatever the hell you need. That certainly makes that an interesting strategy.
I remember, now I remember Night Owl, but now I remember because I thought that he was accidentally had posted in the wrong thread. But
I wasn't going to bring that up, but
No, that's fine. Hey, that's fine. I was sitting here listening to your comments, Wooter, and I'd almost side with the hills. I really believe that is the way to go. Now, Water was talking about he wasn't really sure how much you'd get from the engineers. I don't believe you'd get a better city out of all flatland. I think it takes a little bit of both, and I guess that's one of the things with the windmills is you pick up a little bit of food with that. So I don't agree with the flatland part, or I'd have to do some more research into it to agree to it.
Also with Night Owl, merchant economy. Mention this again, the warmonger style strategy, mass produce great merchants for a huge treasury and go warring forever without worrying about your economy slowing down and only worrying about having enough units to continue the next war with the nearby civilization. Although, I guess I would append that last part, say first ensure that you have enough units to defend what cities, territories you already have before you think about units to go on to the next civilization. It's like maybe you just end up swapping empires. I'll take your empire, you can have mine.
That's a valid point.
He also says, and I can't endorse this option enough, actually. Board, I generally pillage nearby tiles of raised cities because since I can't keep the location and I know the AI is going to pop another settler there, I might as well pillage the nearby improvements, too, to stagnate the growth of the new AI city. Oh, yes. Especially if what I can pillage are towns. Not shiny.
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 having English ninja sounds kind of retarded.
Or like a French warrior. Oops.
Send all emails.
Send it to me. I can gladly entertain you on that. I'm more than up for that challenge.
And being away, all the suggestions that were put out, some of the reasons why I was away. Married? No. Mackie said no. And,
oh.
Who did you ask?
He called up your house. Someone else answered. Can I marry Mackie? Mackie, another person called to ask you to marry them. I think it's from that Zorky site you host on all the time.
Thank you for listening to episode 16 of Polycast, the official podcast of a Bolton Civilization site. I'm Daniel Quick. I'm back. Yay! Imran was back. Say goodbye, Imran.
Goodbye.
Mackie.
Bye-bye.
Grandpa Troll, known as Bruce Conkrite in real life.
I'll catch y'all later.
And Wouter, Snyder's known as the cutest on the forums. Say goodbye, Wouter.
Goodbye, Wouter. That never gets old.
Record date, May 26th, 2007. Soundtrack courtesy Civilization IV, Warlords Expansion Pack, 20th Century Records, and Electric Fun Stuff. Copyright 2007, a Bolton Civilization site at a Bolton.net.